Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I've decided to do a new podcast. This one will be called Brown People, a podcast where I speak to politicians, pundits, mothers, and thinkers about discovering the stories of people of colour. I'll be your host as we dive into the lives of thoughtful individuals who have maybe courted controversy, but have definitely lived a life worth talking about. We'll be talking about the struggles, the triumphs, and everything in between as we hear the experiences of people from all over the globe. We'll be getting to the root of what drives them, how they see the world and how the world sees them, and how they've overcome the obstacles that life has thrown in their way. This is a podcast that will be an exploration and a conversation. So join us as we shine a light on the stories, struggles, and we look at the lives of people of colour. Please subscribe to it today, whether you're a brown person or not.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the windblown bunch of freshly picked herbs who is known as Jacqueline Berthaud, and I'm here today with a cocktail-swilling member of our hen party who is...
Julia Christmas. We are, of course, joined by the classic Scottish buffet, and that's you, our lovely caller-inners, email-inners and WhatsApp-inners.
On this episode, we have a very select group of caller-inners. We hear from Witherspoon, who is talking about Martin Gibson's teeth. Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, and our Stephen, who are both on islands and want to talk about Scottish food. Catherine, who asks, where is the sport in Ambridge?
We also have our new and regular feature from our Stephen, who can be relied upon to explain the ins and outs of some of our favourite Ambridge institutions. And this week, we have the second part of the story of Brookfield.
We also have Tweet of the Week with Purple Pumpkin, our Theo, and we have the social media roundup from Katie. But first, let's look at the week in Ambridge from our Suey Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey Queen or Tart on the Twitters here, and another week in Ambridge. It's been a while since the Archers made me cross enough to shout at the radio, but it's happened this week, and more than once. Strike one, there was some blethering about cricket. I don't understand why they ditched the single wicket and have two teams worth of players when they could barely get a seniors team together last year, let alone a second team. There were various shenanigans and swapping of cousins. Frankly, the most important thing about cricket is whether there's a good tee, messing with the single wicket as soon as Shula's back turned is not on. Strike two is the spectre of Rob, no-bake Titchener. He wants custody, tinned, I don't think so, of Gideon stroke Jack and is prepared to send multiple letters via his solicitor to get it. Helen, Lee and Pat spent the whole week winding each other up and Anna Tregoran turned up. What we need to know is, will he be prosecuted for attempting to kidnap Jack? Will he turn up in the village? Will Lee bugger off to San Francisco like Helen told him to? I feel like we're in an episode of soap, frankly. Strike three. Alice was going for dinner with Kate at Brian and Jennifer's favourite restaurant for their anniversary, which seems awfully broken from my perspective. Adam seems to be in his element back at Home Farm, though, and had admitted to Ian that it's his destiny. Strike four. In the meantime, Tracy's hen night loomed, and she turned down everything that Susan suggested. After many false hopes and remarkable coincidences, Oliver turned up trumps, allowing them a preview of the new Grey Gables. He paid for them to have a cocktail meister, but didn't want to be part of the silly games and general female partiness, but he was taught round in the end. That was one of the very good bits. Emma was at the hen night, but if she carries on the way she's going, I don't think she's going to be at the wedding. She insulted Jazza over potential food for the buffet, and then he turned into a kind of Rabbi Burns, R.C. Nesbitt clone, and rolled out every possible stereotype, including Clootie Dumplings. Emma was gloating over George being employed at the pig unit and taking every chance to say how great he was and how well he was doing at Jazza's job. And then she committed the sin to end all sin by dissing Tracy's wedding dress. Oh, I do hope she gets her comeuppance. Only time will tell. Until next week then, my lovelies. Hope it's a good one.
Thanks for that, Suey. That was a very good roundup of the week, wasn't it? She made us both giggle.
They're always good.
Yeah, they are good. It's really worth it. I love it. Mind you, when Philippa did her singing one a few weeks ago, I thought that was spectacular. But let's just remind our loyal and well-remembering listeners, you've been on the podcast before. You're what I think Royfield refers to as one of our token young folks. I think this is a bit of a case of the eldest and the youngest talking. Although Katie's pretty young as well. So
surpasses generations, that's what I'd say. Unfortunately, I am approaching the big 3-0 next birthday, so I don't think I'll get to be the token young person anymore. So
no, I don't think you will. I think you're definitely passing a threshold there. But it makes a change because I've recorded with Royfield for over a year, occasionally with Quinton, who's about the same sort of age as me, and with Stephen, who's a good few years younger than me, but still on the older side of 50, I think. So for me, it's a delight to be speaking to a young person. I look forward to getting your point of view. Now, one thing I want to ask you is, do your generation do hen nights a lot?
They've sort of become an entire weekend, sort of stretched out. You know, there's trips to Malaga and, you know, across to Ireland and Edinburgh and stuff, but they've definitely become more of a weekend than a night, and sometimes it can bankrupt you the entire weekend. But it's always good fun. But I think there's always a dynamic, isn't there, of sort of different groups of friends who've never met each other grouped together. And luckily, I've never had one where everyone sort of didn't like each other or there were any dramas. I often think that happens on stag do's, considering men say that they don't have any drama. But I do love
it. Yeah, yes, the poor rip. Yes. Well, I'm glad that you know a bit about hen do's. Now, what did you feel about Tracy's hen do and how it went off and how it all came about with Oliver?
I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit disappointed. Like, I wanted more for Tracy. I know that she didn't want more, so I just wanted more for her. I wanted her to have a bit of a wild night. I wanted the karaoke. I wanted a stripper. I wanted Willy Straws and, you know, all of the fun of the fair for Tracy. I just wanted her to have really let her hair down, because she doesn't really do it very often, does she? So I really wanted more for her. I was just going to say weird venue choice, but I'm sure we'll come to that later on.
I think we have somebody who calls in about it, haven't we? maybe we should start the next bit that's in red.
So let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our caller innerers.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
We've got two calls that are about the same subject, so I think we should probably play them first. We have a call from Stephen and a call from Jen. I'll play Stephen's first because it's interesting, but it's not quite as vehement as Jen's.
Hello, you two. Stephen here, calling from the beautiful Åland Islands, a Swedish-speaking part of Finland in the middle of the Baltic Sea. I think that you know that I'm not a huge fan of jazzer, and indeed I found myself agreeing with what Emma clearly wanted to say to Tracy at the hen night, before, sadly, peace was declared. But I want to address a scene involving jazzer from earlier in the week, and suggest that, contrary to what some people have said, jazzer's conversation about Scottish food wasn't lazy stereotyping, but jazzer defending Tracy by winding Emma up. The dishes that jazzer listed, tatty scones, stovies, crappetied, rumbledy thumps, and clutey dumplings, are all rather heavy and certainly very cheap types of food. Three of them are mostly potato, and one is effectively made from the bits of a codfish, the head stuffed with the liver and oatmeal, that most people would reject. They might well be dishes that Mama Creary could have cooked to keep her family fed and warm in Meadow Rise, but they're none of them suitable for a summer wedding reception, and Jazza would have known it. Remember that Tracy had just gone off in a huff, suddenly leaving Jazza alone with Emma. He hadn't given the reception any thought. He's Jazza, after all, still a feckless milkman at heart. So he just came out with a list of dishes that he knew would confuse Emma, and went on his way, leaving chaos in his wake. He even explained to Tracy afterwards that he had claimed to be in charge of the reception to cover for her departure. I think that Jazza's Scottishness is massively overdone. I don't think he's actually visited the place in the more than 20 years he's been around. But in this case, it's been used to, well, vaguely amusing effect.
Greetings, all in Dum-de-dum world. Jen here, calling in after Tuesday's episode where they had the discussion between Emma and Jazzer of the buffet. I can only imagine this was meant to be comedy. As I've said before, I really don't think The Archers does comedy very well. It tends to go in with both boots on. And I found this about as funny as I find Scottish, English and Irishman jokes. It was crass. It was laughing at stereotypes. And I thought we'd move beyond that in the modern era, that we didn't go, oh, look, you funny cultural person. You have funny cultural stereotypes. Let's make fun of that and laugh at that and laugh at the funny words in your language. I really did actually find it genuinely offensive. The first thing Emma leapt to was the deep-fried Mars bar. I'm so done with English people going on and on about Scottish cuisine being full of fried food. There is plenty of wonderful Scottish cuisine. Jazzer is from the west of Scotland. We have a very high Asian population within Scotland. Jazzer might have been asking for curry. He might have been asking for some Scottish fusions like haggis pakora or haggis samosas. We have fresh salmon, we have Angus beef, we have fresh raspberries, we have cranachan, tablet, millionaire shortbread, snowballs, Scotch pies. So many things which are lovely and actually eaten by modern Scots. So why we had to go down the blooming fish heads and things just because they have a funny name and you can say crap it heeds. One is not amused.
Oh, Jen is definitely not amused there. So let's have a look at both of those calls. Now, you've told me that you are originally from the south and you've ended up in Manchester. Yep. So it's been a bit of a culture shock for you. Food is different in Manchester compared to Brighton?
We still have the staple fish and chips, but I don't eat meat. So the veggie and vegan food in Manchester is just as good as Brighton. I will say that there is a lot more pies in the north I didn't expect that I'd see a pie shop so often, but I'm not really a fan of pies as a southerner. So, but I can't say.
Oh, well, that's it. I'm sorry, we're falling out now because I am a pie fan, as anybody who's met me will know, because I love a pie. And that's one of my big delights of going to the UK, is to start eating sausage rolls as you get off the ferry and finish with a steak pie every night. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic. So let's look at those calls then. So Stephen, who's away in the amazing Åland Islands, which is just fantastic, he thought that apart from the food thing aside, the winding up of Emma. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I think Jason knows what he's doing. He's so protective of Tracy, but not in an overprotective way, that he's used his humour to sort of really wind Emma up. And I kind of really enjoyed it. I really like that, because she's obviously gone off now and gone, oh God, I've got to make this entire Scottish buffet. And really, I think he'd be
panic.
Happy.
Make her panic, the bitch.
Make her bloomin' panic. Whereas I think he'd be happy with cheese and pineapple on sticks and a couple of sausage rolls.
Yeah. I think Jazza would just go along. Unlike Stephen, I am a Jazza fan. I think that, he has come round and he's taken on board the family life and everything. I felt very ambivalent towards him after the ketamine years and everything. I thought that was a really... I have a history with people who take drugs, and I really can't cope with any kind of discussion about it, as it were. So that put me off for a long time. But I've actually enjoyed the character of Jazza over the recent months, and it started with his support of Jim.
Yeah.
And it's moved on from there. So what about Jen? I have to say, what a great cultural list. And one of the things I remember from a rare trip to Scotland is raspberries.
Oh, really? I don't think I've
had Scottish raspberries
in Scotland. But I've had... my partner's sister lives in Glasgow, so I've had some amazing food when we've been up to visit there, and Edinburgh as well. So obviously not for me, but really lovely fresh seafood. And I think the best delicious, it is fried though, unfortunately, well, I had a macaroni pie, and that was wonderful, from Scotland. So
that's sticking
at the forefront.
I don't even know what a macaroni pie is.
Macaroni cheese in a pastry. Chef's kiss for me.
Oh, wow. And you've just said you don't like pies, so it must have been good.
But a pastry dish rather than a proper proper pie with gravy.
Yeah, definitely Manchester is good for pies, a bit like London and Hull, all the northern cities, they could do good pies. So I have to say, I understand Jen's her objection to the stereotype. Typical kind of list of, I was quite offended listening to that episode when she said, "Oh yeah, deep fried Mars bars."
Yeah,
I thought that was completely offensive.
I think it's classic Archers. I know we've just been stereotyping the North with pies and stuff, but it is so classic of the Archers to stereotype Northerners, Irish, Welsh, Scottish. It's just. Yeah. Any stereotype they could possibly push on someone not from England as the main country, they will do.
indeed. So let's move on to the next little section. The best and easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. Don't forget the T in the middle, and we'll also find a link in the show notes.
Or you can send us a voice note via WhatsApp on +44 7957 167 696.
Now, next week, Stephen and I shall be recording Dumpty Dum on Saturday morning. So please can we have your calls and emails in on a Friday night? And just a quick add-on to that is that, in fact, we're just putting together the programme of recording up until the beginning of September, and it would appear that most recordings will be done on Saturday. So it's a change of regime. It was great when Royfield, Loic's husband, Royfield was in California. Exactly. He always says I'm one of his many podcast wives, so there you go. When he was in California, recording a lunchtime Sunday after the omnibus for him and in the early evening for me, then the late evening, worked really well. But in fact, we're finding that most people, Saturday morning is the best time. So there we go.
Please keep your cool to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind that you need to be at least 18 to take part.
And we need your help. There are three things you can do. First of all, if you haven't already hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast stream you use, please do so.
Secondly, give us a review. It would be hugely appreciated, especially if it's on Apple Podcasts. And of course, a 5-star review always goes down well. Finally, the third thing that you can do is consider becoming a Patreon. Patreon is a way of tipping creators, and there are different levels with different rewards. If you just go to patreon.com and search for Dumb Tea Dumb, we would be delighted to have your support. You can also go to dumtydum.com and hit the donate button.
Now, we do continue to need your Dumpty Dums to give us a bank of tunes that we can play in the future. So if you fancy singing with friends or family or tooting your tin whistle or sending us an orchestral rendition of Barwick Green, please send it to us. It would be most welcome. We've had a very cute one that's arrived this week from Anya, which will be featured in the future. Very sweet. Now, we've been talking about Stephen's Corner. Stephen's on holiday in Sweden, Finland. And we're going to listen to this part two of his history of Brookfield.
This is the BBC Live Programme. Here is the news.
Here is the second and final part of a two-part, 2 minutes history of Brookfield, with a diversion into the history of Willow Farm. We left Brookfield at the end of the 1960s, having grown from 100 acres in 1954 to 435 acres. In 1970, Dan Archer retired, and Phil and Jill moved into Brookfield. They sold Hollow Tree Farmhouse to Nelson Gabriel, who converted it into flats. Getting ahead of myself a little, I should note that Brookfield later brought it back to use as their pig unit, and later as the base of operations for the Fairbrothers Poultry and Pig Ventures, and more recently Josh's Hens. Brookfield expanded further in 1979, when neighbouring Meadow Farm came onto the market. Phil was now in charge, and he bought 30 acres of Meadow farmland. In 1983, he bought Willow Farm. Willow Farm had belonged to Hayden Evans, Pat Archer's uncle, and was worked by Tony Archer until he and Pat moved to Bridge Farm in 1978. At this point, Mike Tucker took over until 1983, when he and Betty moved on to Ambridge Farm and Hayden sold up. Phil only retained 55 acres of Willow farmland, selling 30 acres to Brian Aldridge, and the remaining 15 acres, a barn and the farmhouse, to Bill Inslee. Bill was a widower from Derbyshire, who had sold his farm near Ashbourne to the National Coal Board, and had decided to make a new start raising rare breed pigs. After he bought the farmhouse, he let Neil Carter rent the barn to keep chickens, and when Bill died in 1986, he left the barn and 8 acres to Neil in his will. The farmhouse was bought by Dr. Thorogood, who let it to the Tuckers after they had gone bankrupt at Ambridge Farm. In 1993, they bought the house, eventually dividing it into two and selling the smaller half as Willow Cottage to a family called the Kemps, who then let it to Brian and Jennifer when they sold Home Farmhouse. But let's get back to Brookfield. When Dan died, Phil was forced to sell the 55 acres of Willow Farm that he had retained, again to Brian, to settle a tax liability. He sold a further 3 acres containing a barn and adjoining buildings for conversion into houses. That left Brookfield at 462 acres, which is how things remained until the recent sale of 2 acres, supposedly for use as a paddock for a family pony, but now intended to be the site of an electric vehicle charging station.
What about you? But I find them fascinating, these reminders of the history of places.
I love them. I love them because I've only been listening for sort of, we've got 12 years. There are so many things that I don't know. So I really enjoy listening to them because they're things that I don't even know how you would Google to get there.
No, exactly. I think Stephen's got a good library of Archer's information books, but also I think he's got a very good memory of things. In fact, because I've got such a rubbish memory, okay. Even for things that happened this week. So what was the, when you first started listening, what was the thing that made you listen or caused you to listen?
So I think I said this when I first came in with Royfield, was that my good friend Jo, she always used to listen to them as sort of a comforting thing because her family had listened to them when she was growing up. And so she put it on one night and we were listening before we went to sleep. That sounds awful, doesn't it? But then I sort of picked it up myself, and it was following on from Kirsty and Tom. And then the big story that really got me listening every week was obviously Helen and Rob, because I just found that, like, you know, this lovely little relaxing soap that I'd listen to, you know, on a Sunday when I'm doing my chores, really just captured something that I think very differently to how we've seen it on TV before. And when you've not got the picture of it, I think it made it even more harrowing because you were picturing it in your mind. And then ever since then, usually every night, but sometimes I'll go for the omnibus if I've had a really busy week. But yeah, I love it.
That's interesting. And how do you feel about the Rob story emerging again and the effect on Helen especially, but Pat and Lee and all the other people around?
I do find Helen obviously quite an unlikable character. And I know that you love Lee, but I'm really not a fan of Lee. But I feel quite sorry for him at the moment because, of course, she's pushing him away because, you know, all of this is going on. She doesn't want to get him involved. But he wants to be there for her. And that's, you know, something that is hard for her to accept. But I think that although she's had a lot of therapy to deal with this, I do think she's, with this going on, she should be going back to speak to someone on a regular basis. To, although you can do all the legal things, you know, having someone to speak to about it and say, I don't know how to speak to my new partner about this. And I just think she needs to do something proactive, as much as that's quite easy for me to say as a listener.
yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, Lee's a difficult character to either like or dislike. I'm quite pleased that you said you don't find Helen an attractive character, because sorry Witherspoon, I don't find her an attractive character at all. And I think her lack of being able to communicate with people about themselves rather than about herself is actually coming to the fore now, and that's the main thing this week with her pushing Lee away. You know, I think we all have heard and seen on Twitter and on Facebook, especially on the Dum to Dum group on Facebook, that Lee is about to go off to work in Coronation Street. So, yeah. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, my gosh, breaking news.
I know. Gosh, I've not been paying attention this week. Oh, gosh, so we might see him written out.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We suppose we'll have to ask the actor. Yeah, he's apparently going to go off for a little while and work on Corrie. So maybe the pushing away in the storyline is kind of indicative that he will go off. Personally, because I like Lee, I think he should escape from Helen. But maybe that's just a bit mean.
Maybe when he goes to see his children, he might not come back for a while.
But I the logistics of it. My son is moving to California this year. And because his partner is having a baby, so I'm going to be a granny in September, which is very exciting for me. But I don't think the logistics of it are very easy at all. And he's coming out of the British Army to go and be a home dad, a homemaker. Partner is in the American Army. She works as a doctor, so she's going to support them whilst he has to work out what he's going to do and how he's going to earn a living. So, it's a weird old thing. So I don't think Lee would find it very easy to move to California. Although my son is actually moving to Santa Fe in California, so
but then
let's just see how it goes with Stephen.
The Archers have never followed anything that requires the rules, so I imagine visas don't apply to anyone in the Archers.
So we're thinking it's an Ambridge World fairy, not just an Ambridge fairy.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, so let's go back to our calls. So we're going to play Witherspoon now, and this is a call that we received last week. but I felt that it was still relevant to this.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, P&K, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Woodspoon and Angus Haggis here, caller-innering from Baltimore, Maryland, where a handsome husband and I are visiting my brother for his 68th birthday. Perhaps Ambridge could use a good dentist such as him. I hope Martin Gibson has lousy teeth. I was so frustrated by his appearance this week, as I'm sure everyone was. I really wanted to shut the proverbial radio off. I thought, poor Neil, he did his best to stand up to Martin. I was so concerned that this would be the start of the rise of George, something I would not be able to bear. Look how he had also charmed his mother. As an aside, Emma's return after being gone for a while was a bit of a surprise. But Neil was smarter than Martin. Without Martin's nor our awareness, he assigned George to Hannah. As Jonah Titchmarsh said on Facebook, I'm warming to Hannah. Remember when Neil and she used to lock horns? It was very smart of Justin, was it him, to assign them different areas to supervise. Hannah does not suffer fools gladly and doesn't budge an inch on what she thinks is right. George will not be able to charm her as he does other women, and is calling women birds. Once in a while, the scriptwriters throw in a term so anachronistic that we just quickly turn around and go, huh? Anyway, will George sink or swim? I'm predicting or hoping he will sink. Of course, then he'll go to Martin, his mother, and his grandmothers to complain about Neil and Hannah for mistreating him so. We'll see. Wait, before I say talk to you soon, a brief word about Helen. Taking a page from the Hannah book of sisters doing it for themselves, she got her groove back. And with the assistance of Natasha, she stood up to a Titchener. I'll say it. Well done, Helen. Talk to you soon.
So, Witherspoon, he was very frustrated by Martin Gibson, wasn't he?
Yes, and the rise of George as well.
Yeah. How do you feel about George, Julia?
I don't really like George, obviously, but I think, like how I really like Tracy, I really like the ones that bring a bit of bring a bit of something to the script. So George does that for me, and I think he's going to continue bringing a little bit of spice to my week in Ambridge for a bit of while to come. And something that Witherspoon mentioned, and I'm going to see if Royfield will make a comment on this when he's editing it, is he said that George calls women birds. And he said, you know, that's so outdated. Is that, you know, the Archer script writers, or is that just general? But my partner's from the Midlands, and it's meant to be more of an affectionate term rather than, you know, our birds, look at them. It's more like, oh, like lovely birds. Like he'll call me his like bird, but not in like a derogatory way. So maybe, and his friends do as well. So maybe that's a Midlands thing, but.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, because of course for my generation it was chicks,
like, yeah.
So, although in my youth the expression for duck, calling somebody duck. Was definitely something that my mother didn't approve of and didn't like. So I like being called duck by the locals. You see, she was a superior being, not coming from Immingham, because she came from Leeds.
Ooh.
He also talked about Helen, but I think because the call came in last week, it was a bit outdated by the end of this week, because he said that she was back in her groove. And I know he is a Helen defender, but this week I think she's been wound down and wound up. And as we said earlier, I agree with you, she needs more therapy to get on with it, to help her through this.
Yeah.
So. But let's listen to Catherine now.
Oh, I loved this call.
I know. It's a very interesting call. And it rang bells with me, because I talked about leisure pursuits at Birmingham in my keynote speech. Ha!
Hi there, it's Catherine. Just suddenly had a moment of revelation at work today that no one in the Archers does any sport. There's a huge sector of society and culture that's missing from the show. Nobody goes to watch a football match. You never hear of anybody staying in to watch the footy, going out to watch the footy, or play football at all. Surely people like George might be really into it, and maybe even, oh, I don't know, maybe even Adam might support a posh football team, who knows. Also rugby, very rugby, isn't it, the Archers, in lots of ways. Johnny's done weightlifting, hasn't he? Someone did a half marathon once, somebody on Twitter said. Horse riding, but that's just sitting on a horse, isn't it? That's not really sport. And I just wanted to know why no one goes to the gym. Surely Kirsty would be there doing a body pump or spin or something like that. And also, Shula would have gone to some nice Zumba at the Village Hall. So, yeah, has anyone got any impressions about how the scriptwriters have totally missed out the existence of sport? We had more mention of the Eurovision than we ever did of the Olympics or FA Cup or anything. I'd be really interested to hear your opinions.
So where do you stand on this one?
So I really enjoyed this call, because it's not something that I've ever really thought about, sort of how Ambridge law, where things just don't seem to happen outside of the one thing that they're focusing on for that week. But I'm from a small village near Brighton, and cricket was the be-all and sort of end-all of a lot of village life. You know, the politics of it all, the teas that were made. I remember one of my first jobs was making cricket teas, and I never wanted to see margarine again. So I understand why there's such a focus on that. And I'm also loving the idea of like Shula and Lillian at the Village Hall in like full Jane Fonda get up and in like doing a Zumba class. I just love the idea of that, you know, George peering in the side of the Village Hall to watch them all doing their best Zumba moves.
Well, of course, we did have Lee giving karate classes, didn't we? That's how he and Helen met. Now, of course, with Grey Gables closed, because they used to go to the gym and the sauna and the swimming pool, didn't they? In those days when that was, so maybe. But one of my things about the Archers is that there's a golf course. Did you know that?
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, the Grey Gables has a golf course, but we never hear of anybody playing golf, do we?
No. They don't play, and the ball never shows football, you know.
No, and that's a big money earner for pubs nowadays, isn't it? Have a big screen.
Did they mention the World Cup and the Euros when England were doing quite well? I can't.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't remember. I mean, and also this whole cricket story from this week where they've changed the single wicket competition. And to put it into two teams. Well, they had trouble last year. They couldn't put a whole team together. So they got the old people, didn't they? They had the vintage cricket. So I agree with Catherine. I think it's a very good call. Keep them coming, Catherine. You always have a good take on life in Ambridge. Love to hear from you. It's very good. So we also had a call from Buggy Squires, our Brian.
Hello, it's Brian. Hope you're well. Right. I don't know if she's ever realises she might not have a job when she comes back from a holiday. There's punishment for taking a break. If old Adam gets his way and goes back to Breach Farm, fairly entitled behaviour. You think, oh, I'll just walk back into my old job. Probably isn't enough money for pay two farm managers. And on the subject of Adam, why does he keep going on and on about Brian's will? Yeah, I know it's a family business and it's got to get it will get resolved, but Brian knows his own mind and he's going to do what he wants to do. And if he doesn't want to tell him what is his will, he won't. I should be best to leave it for a little bit. So that was that. The only other thing I was thinking about was we had a sample of Tom Archer's negotiating style when he was trying to get the get Chris over from the cricket team. It's no wonder he always gets stitched up like a kipper on his business deals. That's my way of thinking. But we have seemed to have made a business of something, so perhaps I'm wrong, but I didn't find him very convincing as a negotiator. He's fairly transparent what he was trying to do. Anyway, I think that's all. Keep up good work. Have fun. Speak to you again. Bye.
Adam, about him being entitled, because he made a comment about worrying that when Stella comes back from a holiday, she's going to find herself out of a job. And he was also amused by Tom's negotiating style. But how did you feel about Adam deciding it was in his destiny?
I can't stand Adam.
Right.
I can't stand him. I think he's really... Sorry, I feel like I don't like a lot of Archer's characters for someone who listens to it every night. But I think he's just boring. He doesn't give me any sort of je ne sais quoi. So I'm not going to lie, a lot of the time when he's talking, I do kind of zone out a little bit. So maybe you take it away on this one.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I'm a bit ambivalent about him. I don't really... the only thing I've always thought is that he has a very strange relationship with his husband. And I thought it was an excellent story about them getting together, the marriage. But like many couples, I mean, it's just bumbling along in a kind of positive, non-negative way. But they're just a bit boring. Although, now one of the things Brian talked about was the will. Why is Adam going on about Brian's will? And that disturbs me.
Are they short of money?
Well, he stole that money, didn't he? Well, he borrowed, in inverted commas. air commas, that money from Home Farm, which is why he ends up leaving. So Ian must have been a well-paid chef at Grey Gables, and now he's running a pizza van with all the outlay of that.
Oh, gosh. And they've got a child as well, haven't
and
they?
A child, yes, on top of that. Does Xander go to nursery? Goodness knows. Don't know a lot about that. I think I might zone out a bit. So we'll let the learned folk of Dumpty Dum Land come back and tell us where we went wrong. I think we better move on. Now let's hear what our social media gurus have been talking about on the Dumpty Dum Facebook page with our Katie.
Hey up, my ducks. It's Katie here at Katie P Land on Twitter and Instagram. First up, Helen and Rob. Louise Lawton's fed up of the Helen and Rob storyline. Some agreed, some didn't. Jonah Titchmarsh also said he was fed up of hearing about Helen's woes. RQ wasn't convinced about Jonah's suspicious surname. Ooh. Rob Williams congratulated Helen on getting it spot on, for once. And Andrea Twelves definitely needs to get out of the sun while she tries to change her perspective on Helen. She soon ran out of steam, though. Kate Lyle questioned about Ursula looking after Henry after Helen was imprisoned. And Kate Penfold pointed out how nice it was to hear from Anna. I'd forgotten all about her, to be honest. Now on to Tracy's hen party extravaganza. Our Witherspoon commented we were seeing Emma at her worst. Pam Delay warned not to tempt fate and that she can be far worse. While Darcy Jorgensen and Rob Williams were as surprised as the rest of us with Oliver joining in with the party. On to other news.
Amanda Keightley admitted she's not a Susan fan, but loved the way she spoke to Alice at the end of one of the episodes and wished her mother-in-law had spoken to her the same way after her mum had died. It really was lovely. Rob Williams asked what Neil's relationship with Martin Gibson is, and Genevieve Ann Holmes read the comment wrong and led to, interesting ideas. Michael Wylock shared that his niece is friends with the daughter of one of the Archer's actors. Check out the post to see who it was and how many other dum-de-dummers have encountered other actors. Exciting stuff. Sarah Cozzi spotted a theme from last week's episodes of Denied Inheritance. Worth looking at the reasoning and well spotted. Vicky Cole's husband's in her good books after the awesome present he bought her this week. Jeremy Farthing shared a story about the Tate Britain rehanging its paintings. Might be worth a look after the Freddie storyline. Joan Smith spotted that Boston, the American one, has edible forest gardens, so they are a thing. Susan Delamere shared life-saving advice that Dr. Hill recommends good old Barwick Green for cardiac resuscitation. I've just got one question. Where does the bar fit in? And finally, Dickie Turdus shared a wonderful sunny picture outside the Old Bull. It looked like the perfect place to be in this weather. Make mine a pint of Shires, please. As usual, welcome to the newbies. Make yourselves known, settle in with a cuppa, and let us know your thoughts. Until next time, ta-ra!
Thank you to everyone who's posted their thoughts on the Dum-de-Dum Facebook page. And now it's time to welcome the new members to that group of Facebookers.
Yes, a very warm welcome to
Mandy Grant,
Louise Dennis,
and Mandy Belshaw, who revealed herself to be Red Agnes, who we know and love of old. So we go from our caller-inners to our emailer-inners. And I've had two messages this week.
Hello, Jacqueline, Julia, and Dum-de-Dummers everywhere. It's a purple pumpkin here emailing in with an observation and plot prediction. The observation is about the Celts of Ambridge. Isn't it curious that at Bridge Farm, both Tom Archer's mother and his wife are Welsh, whereas over at Home Farm, both Brian Aldridge and his late wife had illegitimate children with Irish people, and meanwhile, Adam married one. I wonder if this means that Chelsea or Brad is bound to take up with a Scot now Jazza is joining their family. And so to the plot prediction. Adam will want to follow up on Erin's abortive link to Paddy, and he will realise that she is the perfect person to accompany him on a trip to the Emerald Isle, is Rory, who has his family over there. This leads to a reconciliation between Rory and the Aldridges, and maybe Adam will even find Paddy alive and well. Well, that is the last... That last bit is definitely fantasy, but who knows? Keep up the good work and talk to you soon. Purple Pumpkin.
Very interesting. What did you think about the Erin storyline?
Oh, yeah. I don't think she's legit at all. At all. I don't think she's even related. I think she thinks, like Adam, that there's some money somewhere that she can get her hands on, because all of it was just so shifty. So shifty.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the fact that she backpedaled so quickly. I know Philippa and Katie talked about it last week, but it stuck in my mind, especially as when we were in Birmingham in April, Adam had just found her and quite a few of us had a chat. And I think we all thought, ooh, scam immediately.
Yeah.
And that seems to be kind of following on her. But it's very interesting. Just remembered something that was said in the social media roundup about Alice and Susan. What did you think about that?
I thought it was quite heartwarming, actually, because Susan can be quite a busybody, can't she?
Yeah.
So I think I felt genuinely quite touched and emotional about that. I actually, you know, when those times when you go, you're listening and you go, sort of stop for a minute and you go, oh, that's actually really lovely. It was one of those moments for me this week.
And I think that's the thing with Susan, I've always said it, that actually, yes, she's the most annoying busybody, up her own bottom type of person. You know, she's so got a broom up the middle of her back. But then she can be incredibly kind and caring. And I think, you know, she's got over the bitterness about Alice and Martha and Chris, and she's taking Alice on as maybe a project, but also just being a very kind mother-in-law. So yeah, very nice. I've had a couple of nice mother-in-laws and a pretty horrible one, so I know what she's going on.
I'm not married, but my partner's mother is absolutely lovely, so
that's a very good positive thing then. We also had an email from Nathan Jeffrey, here. And because Philippa and Katie won't be doing the podcast for another few weeks yet, and it was about Hazel Woolley, and the subject is COVID. And he said, thanks for the great podcast. A quick point, though. Now, it wasn't the first COVID case. Hazel Woolley had long COVID. Now, I had remembered that Hazel had long COVID, but we had heard of, last week we heard that there was a meeting cancelled by, from, Adam was going to a meeting with some suppliers, and it was cancelled due to somebody having COVID. So, and they thought that was the first case, but apparently it wasn't. So, there we go.
Do you remember? She had long COVID.
I think she came to Ambridge to kind of recover, and that's when she turfed Natasha and Tom out the flat, which she still owns.
Yes, of course. I didn't realise it was long COVID that was the reason for her illness, but now that makes sense. Yeah.
Is COVID still going around in the UK?
I actually had a conversation about this week. It does seem like, you know, someone said the other day, oh, I can't come into the office this week, I've got COVID. And I sort of thought, I didn't even know that you could still buy tests for less than a fiver anymore. It's sort of, it's definitely, you know, gone past it. And the sort of, not hysteria, because obviously it was a massive, massive thing. But I don't think if you got a sniffle and a sore throat, my brain would now automatically go to, oh, I've got a cold rather than... Mm. I've got COVID. But I do think it will still, you know, you still feel the repercussions of, siren's just going past my window. You still feel the repercussions of it. I said, you know, I think socializing so different, going abroad is so different. People, obviously British people never know how to act on a plane or at an airport, but I definitely think it's a lot worse than it used to be. And, you know, the people who never went out during sort of before COVID because they weren't old enough and now going out, and it's a bit of a sort of shock and a disaster of the things that they can and can't do. So I do think the repercussions are still going on, but I don't think it's still as rife, really.
Right. That's very interesting, because nobody ever seems to talk about it here in France.
It's just forgotten, brushed under the rug.
It's gone. That was last week. There's more important things to talk about this week. weird, different cultural differences. Now, let's have a look at what Theo, our purple pumpkin, has found to entertain us on Twitter this week with her tweets of the week.
Hello, Jacqueline, Julia and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of tweets of the week. And my thanks as ever to Jen, Bernadette, Quentin and everyone else who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week, a thread I recommend you take a look at was started by Jen, Ambridge Pony Club, commenting that although herbs grow fast, there's only been an edible forest at Bridge Farm since March, so how can they have herbs big enough to sell already? There are a lot of good comments in the thread, but here are two of my favourites. Taller Hopper at Taller Hopper said, Bridge Farm appears to be supporting, with no hardship, Tony, Pat, Tom, Natasha, the twins, Helen, Henry, Jack, Johnny, Adam, Susan and Clary. That's 9 adults and 4 children. What herbs are they growing exactly? And Miranda, Apple Android app, added, they probably thrive on all the bullshit Tom and Natasha spout. So, on to my medals for Tweets of the Week, with a note that these will for now include contributions from the previous week's omnibus, given the time of recording. In bronze position, it's regular contributor Brian Holding at Buggy Swires, who has Adam saying, oh, hi Stella, I hope you had a good holiday. By the way, I've asked for my old job back. Here's the dog, we'll send the P45 in the post. In silver, it's Charlie Notton at 19CEN. Yes, Pat, this is Rob, winner of Borsetshire's Most Despicable Shitweasel 9 years running. And the gold medal this week goes to Richard Listening at Long Waverer. I'm no hen expert, but one featuring your sister, your arch enemy and your ex-boss isn't my idea of a sparkly night. Well, that's it for this week. See you all on Twitter next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all those that were mentioned in Purple Pumpkin's Roundup, but especially those medal winners.
As you know, we're on Twitter and you can find us at Dumpty Dum, which is very well looked after by Purple Pumpkin as an account, where you can join in the tweet along fun by using the hashtag TheArchers with a capital T and a capital A, which helps the visually impaired to join in the fun. I can be found on Twitter as Gilberto Sanguin. How about you, Julia? Are you on Twitter?
I am indeed. I recently changed my Twitter username because I had a tweet that went a bit viral and I got a bit scared about digital footprints. Okay. So I changed my... it wasn't anything bad. It was just about getting called Julie instead of Julia. And so I'm now at JESG212 to find me.
And do you tweet about the Archers?
Not often, because I don't think many people that follow me are very interested in that. But I did get a lovely text from my friend Molly this week that said, I did a pub quiz last night and I didn't want to cheat, but one of the questions that we didn't get right was, what is the name of the town in which the Archers is set? And she said, I wish that you were on my team. So that was quite nice.
Yeah, that is very nice. Now, don't forget, we're on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, which is run by the very lovely Katie. So do follow us there. And you can find me, I'm simply Jacqueline Berto. What about you? Are you doing an Instagrammer?
I am. I'm at Julia Esgate, E-S-G-A-T-E, on Instagram. Not really much about the Archers on there. Maybe a photo of me outside the Old Bull when I went to Ink Barrow. Luckily, my friend Jo was with me, is an Archers fan too. So
she's the one that introduced you to it, isn't she?
She is. So it felt like a bit of a pilgrimage together to go. It was freezing and it was snowing, if I remember.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I've got some friends who run a business very close to there, and I had to go and see them on a trip last March. I had a great morning with them and they helped me with one of my sewing machines and some quilting stuff. And I decided I'd go and have lunch at the Bull. It was pouring down with rain in such a way that I knew that if I even opened the car door, I was going to be soaked before. And I parked very close to the door, so I didn't even go in. It was hailing, snowy, because I always had to travel on to London afterwards. So I thought, I can't bear to be soaked wet in the pub and then soaked wet in the car. So I've seen it from the outside, but it's on my bucket list of things to do.
Next time you're in the UK, you'll be there.
Maybe. I don't know. It depends. If I have to go straight from Portsmouth to Immingham, it doesn't really go via Ink Barrow. We'll see. We'll see. I'll make it one day.
It remains just to say thank you as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos. As ever, we also thank Shambridge for her voices and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
And also thank you to Royfield Brown for editing this edition of the podcast. I'll be back next week with Stephen. And in a few weeks' time, it'll be P&Q. And then after that, we'll have a rolling number of hosts. Hope we'll speak again soon, Julia.
You too.
It's been very funny for me recording with you because, you know, I've got a dog called Julia.
Have you? Oh,
and then Julia. It's Julia. In fact, we say Juju. Does anybody ever call you Juju rather than Julia?
No. Right. I get Jules occasionally, but not Juju. I'm going to take a photo of us for Katie before.
Me too. So a big smile first. I'll take mine. I'll try and look at the green light so I don't get look cross-eyed. Okay.
There we go. Oh, God, my camera's dirty. Sorry, Royfield, all this chit-chat in the back of the end too.
I just cut it all out.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Julia, for joining me. And we'll see if we can program another date, maybe in July, if you're up to it.
Lovely.
Are you around in July?
Most of the weekends, yes. Got a busy June, but a very empty July, which is nice.
That's good. I'm away for the first half of August, so we'll try and pick up then.
Lovely. See you soon.
See you soon. Cheers. Bye. Have a nice day.
You too.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.